You're listening to Away With Words, the show about language and how we use it. I'm Grant Barrett.
And I'm Martha Barnett. In March of 2018, an international team of 26 researchers and support staff were deposited at a research station in Antarctica, and they were left to conduct 6 months of scientific studies there. They were totally isolated. They were at the bottom of the world in the dead of winter. There were a few Germans, some Scots, a speaker of Welsh, and a couple of Americans, and somebody from Iceland. So the language they all shared was English. And during their stay, they took part in a study by phonetics researchers in Germany. And every few weeks, they would go off by themselves and record themselves saying the same 29 words. And a funny thing happened, because at the end of those 6 months, their accents had changed ever so slightly. Now, not so that you could hear it, but the researchers back in Germany could see those changes by analyzing the acoustic waves on computers. It's a fascinating study, and we'll link to it online. Another interesting thing that came up in news reports about all this was some of the vocabulary that the researchers used. For example, they used the word dingle. And they use the word dingle to mean clear weather, a dingle day, or the weather is dingle clear. And that was a really positive term. It's dingle outside. Another term that they used is electric soup. Any idea what electric soup is, Grant?
Oh, no. Electric eels turned into soup? I don't really know. Electric soup. The bouncing of their own lights off of the fog?
I love all of these. I'm just going to let you go.
I don't know. Tell me.
Electric soup is wine. And again, this isn't a term that they came up with themselves, because apparently they use this term in Scotland to refer to fortified wine, fortified different ways. And what strikes me about it is the kind of language that you pick up when you're working in the workplace with people who aren't from your own background, you know?
Yeah, just this mix and from all these different people. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a full history waiting to be written of all of this language. Well, whether you work in the Arctic or Antarctic or somewhere in between, we'd love to hear the language of your workplace. What's that special word or that special phrase or the in-joke that just seems to last and last and last? We'd love to hear about it. 877-929-9673 is toll-free in the United States and Canada. And if you're somewhere else in the world, there are lots of ways to reach us. Go to our website at waywardradio.org and find them all. Hello, you have a way with words.
Hi, this is Deb Meekum from Omaha, Nebraska.
Hello, Deb. Welcome to the show.
Well, the other day, listening to my oldies station, I heard Casey and the Sunshine Band playing Shake Your Booty. And I realized that my four-year-old granddaughter uses the word booty when she refers to her derriere. And then I wondered about pirate booty. And I just wondered where that all came from, if there's a connection between the two. One of my thoughts about a pirate's booty is I know there's a lot of French history with some of the pirates, and I wondered if it was some sort of relationship to the French word beauté. But I have no idea, but it's just kind of a funny word, and I wondered if the two were connected and how we got to use them so frequently.
Great question. Now I'm picturing all these pirates shaking their booty.
Shaking their booty.
Yeah, but those two words are not related. The booty that is what pirates covet is probably from an old Germanic word that means loot or plunder. And that goes back to the 15th century. And it may be influenced by the old English word boat, B-O-T, which means advantage or a little more. And that gave us to boot, as in, you know, in addition, something to boot.
Oh, sure. Okay.
So the pirate's booty is not related to your derriere, the booty that you shake, and I'm sure you did when that song came on. That booty is actually an alteration of botty, B-O-T-T-Y, which is your bottom. And back in the 1920s, in the language of Black Americans, botty was a term for for the derriere. And over time, body became booty and bootylicious.
My granddaughter says, I'm going to scooch my booty over.
Yeah, there you go. Scooch your booty.
Yeah.
Scooch your boot.
Yes. Yes. All righty then. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for calling, Deb.
All right. Take care, Deb.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Hey there. You have a way with words.
Hi, this is Ian Charlton calling from Jacksonville, Florida. I'm in the Navy band here in Jacksonville, Florida, and musicians have got a lot of slang that we use, and one of those that I've been using for years has been a clam. We apply that to, you know, a wrong note, a chip note, any kind of error in performance, and I've noticed myself using it the other day in conversation and wondered, why a clam? Why do we call it a clam? Why isn't it something else? And because I listened to your show, I thought you folks would probably have an answer for me.
So a horn player plays a wrong note and the leader stops and says, you clammed?
It can be either a noun or a verb, usually more as a noun. The leader might say there are a lot of clams in there. We need to practice where the clams are. But occasionally you will use it as a verb, like, you know, you clammed. But that seems to be a little less frequent.
Okay. We do know something about this, and I think we can help you get to the bottom of it.
Oh, I'd love it.
There are a couple jazz dictionaries, and one by Robert Golden is the one that is the most authoritative. And so this is the one that I'm going to use as my primary source, but there are other people who have talked about this over the last 100 years. And let's take this history in reverse order, because I think it has more to say. So right now we're talking about clam, meaning a particularly egregious musical error, right?
Yes.
So it's something that kind of stands out to everybody. And
right.
This meaning has been around since at least the mid-1950s. So that's
okay.
Pretty interesting. During that same period, there was the jazz slang clam bake. It was a jam session with, unfortunately, bad vibes or no groove and just nothing working between the musicians. Lots of clams,
okay.
In other words, like a clam bake. And outside of jazz, at the same time in everyday slang, a clam bake was a party or other event that wasn't all it was supposed to be, basically a fun time that fizzled. So clam bake was basically a bad time in slang, both in jazz and outside of jazz.
Okay.
That clam bake, that negative clam bake, had as far back as the 1930s, it was a good thing in jazz. So somewhere along the way, it transformed. So
okay.
A clam bake was a good jam session. And we know this because there's lots of records of it. For example, Tommy Dorsey had his Clam Bake 7. This was a smaller band within a band from his larger group. And it wasn't
right.
Named that because it was a bad group. It was because it was very good. So somewhere along the way, was something called pejoration happened. This is like the word pejorative, where we went from something mm-hmm. positive to something negative. And that positive that we went from was a real clam bake. These are outdoor gatherings where seafood and other things are baked or steamed, which are, you know, nice parties to have. And so so we went from the literal actual clam bake, something positive, to a figurative clam, something negative, over a span of a couple decades.
So why did that happen? What was the impetus behind the language changing?
It's because people love to mess with words. They love to play with language. That's literally it.
What's really interesting to me, too, is that it's extended beyond music. I used to do a lot of rowing and sculling, and we would always talk about catching a clam. You know, you're in a 4 or an 8-person boat, and somebody messes up, and the oar doesn't go completely in the water the right way, and you're said to catch a clam.
So that means you're out of rhythm, just like a jazz musician might be out of rhythm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
Interesting. Yeah, I hadn't heard that one. That's pretty cool. So there's some weird thing that happened where clam bake went from a positive jam session to a negative jam session. And that's the one that interests me the most. There's like this 20-year period where that transition happened. And it's possible that the slang became skunked, as linguists sometimes say, where a term becomes so overused that the cool people stop using it. and only the squares use it. And then so the cool people kind of just use it as a pejorative term for the square people who are still using it.
Interesting. Thank you. That clears up a lot and gives me some places to look and read a little more.
So, Ian, we'd love to hear some more musical slang sometime. I'm sure you have a lot of it.
And some of it I'm not even sure is slang anymore. It's just I use it enough, but that is just part of the language. But that was one I just got to thinking. It's like, why a clam? Does it have to do with the food, that it's a mollusk? But I had no idea that it was descended from, you know, the party, a clam bake. That's cool. Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling.
Appreciate it. Take care.
Appreciate you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bianca Bosker is a journalist who really gets into her subjects, and she was curious about the world of contemporary art, so she spent 5 years working in galleries and taking entry-level jobs, doing things like working in artists' studios. She became a security guard at the Guggenheim Museum, all in hopes of getting a better understanding of that world, which is very, very insular. And the result is her new book. It's called Get the Picture, and it's very funny, particularly about the language of the art world, which, if you've spent any time around it, you know can be impenetrable sometimes. They use terms like indexicality and iconicity. And in one case, Bosker tells a curator that this performance art piece that they just saw was boring. And the curator says, "It wasn't boring. It was durational."
Oh, I'm hanging on to that one. Durational. This has been a durational meeting. Thank you.
Yeah. That's good. That could be a great euphemism, you know, in the workplace. Oh, my. And here's one other thing to hang on to. Her line from the book that goes, "Art devotees spoke like they were trapped in dictionaries and being forced to chew their way out."
I'm imagining like the alien monster.
That book, again, is called Get the Picture, A Mind-Bending Journey Among the Inspired Artists and Obsessive Art Fiends Who Taught Me How to See, and it's by Bianca Bosker.
Well, chew your way to a telephone, 877-929-9673, or share your impenetrable jargon with us in email words@waywardradio.org.
Support for Away with Words comes from the American School of Classical Studies at Athens, presenting Emily Wilson, translator of the Iliad, May 8th at St. Bartholomew's Church in New York City. More at ascsa.edu.gr.